listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Jimmy Johnson said a lot of coaches feel bad about cutting players. I don't. Good God, you're still cold-blooded. And they got Kevin. See, Kevin's a nice guy.
That is true. This is the worst day for many of these players in their lives. And you got Jimmy Johnson saying that. Yep. And then what was it? Ben DiNucci was having a beer at the airport. And he says there's nothing like the cut for the eighth time beer at the airport.
Oh, God. Then you turn on the radio and...
Two guys doing slide whistle
radio.
Two guys
doing slide whistles.
Oh, we do have, by the way, I just was told by our boss, Keith Britton, a major show announcement in the final segment of the show.
It's going to be a big one.
It is seriously going to be a big show, and it's going to change everything.
Certainly
when it comes to this show. I'm trying not to give it away. So I'll just say it is a game changer for the show.
Yes. The show is staying together, but it's a game changer of how you could take it in.
That's some news I didn't want.
This will probably lead to our ultimate demise. I mean, let's be honest.
Let's not, obviously. Let's not jinx it now.
No, this is going to be bad for the show.
Every day's a Friday now.
Now that I think about it.
Oh, that's right. Every day's a Friday now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we set sail on Shador... What did you think? I'm going to get to the phones here in a second, which most of the calls are from out of state.
Yeah, I do think it's... Mitch said, hey, check it out right now. You just talked about Shador Sanders and his national following. We're seeing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have 10 lines lit up, and like 8 of them are not from Cleveland.
We should just ask him, did you find us through Shador? What did you think of Joe? Before we set sail on everything else, what did you think of Joe? Anthony, I'm asking you the question. Yeah. What did you think of Joe?
I thought that arm looks awesome, and he looks like he's ready to roll. I am curious, you know, his mobility.
What did you think of Pierre Strong?
Well, hold on. We can get to the running game.
I'm just asking you right off the rip about other guys before we move on.
I saw some good things. Just in terms of Joe, though, I know you're doing this to make a point. Joe.
I'm not doing it to make a point. I'm asking you questions.
I do think that mobility is the one thing. The arm is great. I want to see... that mobility. And you didn't get a big chance, and that's good. You don't want to see his mobility in the preseason. But everybody's wondering, how many games is it really going to be with Joe Flacco? Well, that arm, everything I saw from that arm, he'd go full 17 games. Why not?
What was the point you thought I was trying to make?
Oh, just going through the other players not named Shador. We haven't broken down what we think this offense, you know, actually accomplished in the preseason.
Yeah, if I'm going to make any point, it's that I think a lot of people don't think very highly of you, so they're going to, again, like the people who, I said this yet last week, and there were so many people saying, you're wrong. I go, no, I'm absolutely right. I know I'm right. That even if you, because there was a lot of people who do not like Shador Sanders who got in saying I was wrong. I go, you're like talking about Shador Sanders. You like hearing about Shador Sanders, good, bad, ugly, whatever it is. And you want to see, because I believe strongly that the vast majority of Browns fans, they know in their heart of hearts that he may be the only way out of it without having to go use your draft picks. And if he's not the only way out of it, then we'll just go use our draft picks. But is anybody who isn't having a daily fight about the fourth team quarterback trying to say that the third team quarterback is going to be the future of your team? No, unless their last name is Gabriel. That's it. And I bet there's even those in the family who probably don't think that. Or at least don't think it right now. So if we're being completely honest with each other, there is, even if you dislike him, there's going to be curiosity. But I was legitimately asking, hey, what'd you think of Joe? Hey, what do you think? What did you think of Dylan? What did you think of Dylan, Anthony?
I thought he was pretty good. You know, I've used pretty good a lot during the preseason at times. And, you know, people get really mad because it's not either great or awful. I thought he was pretty good. I do think, you know, it's just, I think all these quarterbacks are going to have chemistry issues with their wide receivers because they just, this isn't a normal camp. Like, I've never seen a camp like this where they've had to allocate the reps the way they've allocated them. You see some arm talent there from Dylan, certainly. It doesn't have me thinking anything different than I thought when they drafted him, which was I thought he was overdrafted. And he's, I think the hope for him long term is a backup. I mean, people were saying things about him as a starter, and I'm like, he's got nowhere near the talent of Kyler Murray. And how has Kyler Murray been as a starter? He's been a starter. Like, I don't think we're questioning whether Kyler Murray can start for teams in this league, but is Kyler Murray ever somebody who you're going to count on to make the playoffs, to lead your team to the playoffs as a starting quarterback?
No.
And like, I don't think Dylan Gabriel has anywhere near the talent of Kyler Murray. Am I off base on that one? I mean, Kyler Murray was taken number one overall, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're off base at all. I think you're right. Okay, Pierre Strong. What did you think of Pierre Strong?
He showed, again, he's had glimpses.
I think he tried to make the most of this opportunity here.
Yeah, I think so, because he knows all the noise about the running back position. And Judkins, we don't know. We don't know the situation about Judkins at all. I don't feel any better about it after this weekend than I did. So, you know, they're going to need Pierre Strong.
What did you think of the defense?
Preseason,
not throughout, not just game three. I mean, I think they were 15th or 16th. They said middle of the pack. I know they were number one or number two in year one with Jim Schwartz. What do you think they can be this year?
I think they'd be a top five defense.
Okay. That's all.
Because I think these rookies are good. Now, what'd you think of the Carson sack? Where he just lined up and ran towards quarterback and sacked him. That's great.
It was a preseason sack.
Could you have gotten a sack there?
No.
Owen, could you have in your heyday? Do you think you could have sacked a quarterback there?
In my heyday?
Yeah.
If everyone else is 5'11 and below, yes. But
you have to run to the quarterback.
Then no.
I asked the question, could I play defensive tackle for two plays in a legitimate NFL game?
Oh, I like that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And there was like 80% of the people were like, no. And they're like, well, do you just have to lay there? And I go, yeah, all I have to do is lay there. Could I physically do two snaps in the NFL? 80% of the people said no, and I happen to agree with the 80% of the people.
I think you could.
I don't think I could. I think that the physical punishment of the first snap would be too much to take the second snap. It'd be very difficult. Dave, all right, you ready to go back?
I mean, Barkevious Mingo played snaps in the NFL.
Barkevious Mingo was a great athlete. What am I? Not a great athlete.
Let's go back to Ken in your heyday. I want to focus on
Ken
the heyday.
Ken didn't have a heyday.
Before the career-ending injury.
Yeah, before the tomahawk chop.
Yeah.
I was really good in youth football when I was bigger than everybody else, but we're not allowed to say anything about youth football because he'll walk out of the studio.
What were your lift, clean, and jerk numbers?
I got Survivor Club.
You
over
did.
1,000.
You got one of the shirts.
Over 1,000. I got Survivor Club.
Did you wear the shirt proudly?
Hell yeah, I wore the shirt proudly.
Did you make it into a cutoff or no?
No. I still have it somewhere in my house. I still have the shirt. I know I have the shirt somewhere. And if my wife threw that shirt away, it's divorce city, brother.
Yeah, because you can't go get those.
No, you have to earn that shirt, and I can't earn that shirt again. Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, you ain't getting 1,000 now.
Highest I ever squatted, 735. But that was after high school.
So you're a member of the 700 club.
Yeah, I got 735.
That's why I'll call you 700.
There was there was a time.
I know.
Now I'm
going to
join the 700 club, but that's for something different. That's going to be a lot of weight.
You can.
I've seen. That's another club. I've seen the old physique from Ken Carmen. You look like an ass kicker.
It makes the new physique that much more depressing. That's probably why Keith rips me all the time. I'm like, Keith, I'm not going back there, dude. It's not happening. Back's too bad. Thomas in Buffalo, New York. He's listening on the Free Odyssey app. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, you guys. How y'all doing today?
We're doing wonderful, Thomas. You go right on ahead.
All right. First of all, I'd like to say, like, man, I listen to y'all a lot, bro. Y'all talk some real good stuff, man, and I really appreciate what y'all say.
But here comes the butt. Here comes the butt. What's your problem?
No, ain't no butt.
Oh, okay.
Second of all, I just like to say, man, like, if you look at the routes that he was given, Shadur was given, all of them was long. So by the time he dropped back, that number, the dude that was blocking for number 72, who he was supposed to be blocking, he was in the backfield. It wasn't no way he could get rid of the ball. It was one pass play that he had an in route that was like 10 yards he could have threw, and he missed that. But also, he was the best quarterback in camp with throwing the ball, and he wasn't throwing to no ones. Like, make him our number one, take them two draft picks from next year, and give him to Dallas and bring Mike up here to be the other DN with Miles. And I think we'll be good.
I can't advocate, Thomas. Thank you very much for the call. I can't advocate making him our first team quarterback. I can't do. No, we can't do that.
And trade away the two number ones.
Guys, there again on third down and long. There's crossing routes there that he could have just dumped it right off and lived to fight another series, and he didn't. And it was just, it was a bad day. I don't think that the offense was that different. Emory Hunt thinks different. He'll talk to us coming up at 9:22. But I don't think the offense was that different from what he had dealt with in his first preseason game. Joe in Chicago, Illinois, home of Scruff McGruff. He's next up on the Fan. Hello.
Hey, guys. I have a question. Do you guys, I don't know, maybe you guys are just hesitant, but why can't you just call out his flaws? Like, I really just don't think he is as good as you guys are making him out to be. I really don't think he can really be developed.
There's, well, what do you like, want me to reason. Say? You want me to say all these things? I think he can be developed. I think he has a higher ceiling than the other two backup quarterbacks on the roster.
He doesn't have a higher ceiling than Dillon Gabriel.
You just think he stinks.
He's not an NFL quarterback. There's a reason why 32 teams passed on him. Numerous NFL, former NFL scouts basically had a lower, like a day three, day four pick on him. Some of them have had him going undrafted. He's just not as good. I mean, next year's draft, you have Arch Manning, Gus, Lenore Sellers. That's basically, that's where you guys are going to find your future franchise.
Well, that part I agree with, but I think, I do not believe that Dillon Gabriel is cut out to be a franchise quarterback. And frankly,
I never said that, but he definitely has a higher ceiling than Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders shouldn't be in an NFL roster.
Oh, I flatly disagree.
The only reason why he's at the NFL roster is because of his last name. If it wasn't for his last name, then he wouldn't be in the league.
Honestly, if he didn't have his last name and he was a guy who took over at Colorado and led Colorado from 1-11 to in 2 years 9-4 and in a bowl game, I think that he would have gone higher than the fifth round. I think that what we're seeing here, the fight over a guy that does not. Who should not be starting in week one and probably should wait a while. And probably even some people are saying redshirt. I think, Joe, and thank you very much for the call. I think that that's part of the reason why that he went so late, because of the fight that we're all having right now. When I say he has a higher ceiling, I think that one guy has better physical attributes. One guy I think has a better chance that if you were able to harness it, would have a better chance of being a franchise quarterback. I think Dillon Gabriel is a career backup quarterback. So when it gets to the point where the season has got away from us and I want to see someone that gives me a chance to look into the future, I'm not trying to be mean-spirited to Dillon Gabriel. It's not Dillon Gabriel. It would be Shedeur Sanders. So when we get to just, I want to see mode, then I want to take a look at Shedeur before Dillon. Because I think Dillon Gabriel will go out there and he'll put together the same performances next preseason and the same performances in the next preseason and in the same games during the regular season when he's filling in for a franchise quarterback, because that's what I think Dillon Gabriel's future is. And if I'm wrong about that and he ends up being a franchise quarterback, I would love to be wrong. Love, 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 hand to God, love to be wrong. And when we tell you guys what's coming up at 9:45, you will be able to see in real time how much I would love to be wrong.
I will start with what I thought was most interesting. Great question there on in-season development for the rookies. Kevin was very generic, but he did make, you know, not just for rookie quarterbacks, but ongoing development for all of them. They're going to be extremely intentional with that and talked about. I thought this was the most interesting part, bringing them along with extra meeting time and practice time that fits within the rules.
No, that's nice. That's good. Everything we've seen documented, he's taken real interest in a lot of this rookie class.
Yeah.
As he should. Like, the rookie classes right now, it's the thing that everyone gets to kind of, like, hang your head up high about when you talk about this Browns roster.
Well, and I just think, like, listen, I have no doubt that they're going to give Dillon Gabriel a plethora of opportunities in camp, in season to get ready. Like, it really wouldn't surprise me. What was the number you threw out the other day? 85-90% of the reps is what
starting quarterback typically get. Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if Dillon was getting 25% of the snaps at one point, or 30% of the snaps as the Browns start to look ahead. I think the most interesting one, not because it's Shedeur, but because it's the third quarterback who happens to have the perception is he has a higher physical ceiling than Dillon Gabriel, a perception I believe in as well. does he get any of the reps, or is his reps predominantly or maybe only specifically, at least when Joe's the starter, on scout team?
So it is interesting because typically, I mean, he would be scout team and you wouldn't think anything else of it. But if we're going to do this in an unorthodox way, maybe they continue to do this in an unorthodox way and Shador actually gets some reps. But I would highly doubt it. It's just not how this is ever really done.
I think my worry, not necessarily with Dylan, right? Because Dylan is the backup, so you can frame this in a specific way. And I think Kevin, this is where Kevin, I think his ability to be shrewd is actually, is a benefit here. Mm-hmm. Just understanding that if you take too many reps away from Joe Flacco, your plan is going to become too obvious and it's going to start to look like you're not doing everything you can to win. This gets back to
sure.
The thing you and I talked about, the push and pull between ball control and simplify the offense. Let's have this identity, which is run the ball a lot, run the ball with authority, based off an offensive line that the best thing they do as constructed right now is running the damn ball, then play action off that, and then you get select throws from there versus let Joe Flacco cook, because that's a guy who can still win you games single-handedly at this point in his career, even if he can lose you those games single-handedly as well.
So I thought Ashley made a really good point on that because, she highlighted the idea that it's almost like Stefanski takes a pride in being able to go from one quarterback to another and adapt to what that quarterback needs. You know, some quarterbacks and some coaches, I feel like you're right, and it would be, we set it up for this quarterback and now we're just kind of screwed because it's the only thing we have set up and there's nothing really else we can do. But Stefanski in his time here has taken like a unique pride to the ability of, okay, this was our quarterback, now we have to go to this guy and this guy does things a little bit differently, so I'll make it for this quarterback and catering it to the new quarterback that he has.
So he has taken a pride in it. I don't know how, outside of last year where they swapped out coordinators, they swapped out the blocking scheme. I don't know that that was the intent, but I think Andy Dickerson came up and said, why don't we do nothing? But I think he takes pride in it. I don't think he gets credit for it. Like, he built the offense around Jacoby Brissett and then plugged Deshaun Watson into it in 2023. Obviously, 2024 was kind of... I go all the way back to 2022. Then 2023, you never really had a chance to identify what you were doing, but I think the most truest... Like, I don't see a lot of difference other than Joe taking shots down the field.
And I think that's the one that he would hang his hat on.
What they tried to do with Joe... what they did with PJ Walker, what they did with DTR, and what they did with Deshaun.
Because the setup between how they started the season with Deshaun and then how they closed it with the final five games with Joe, was night and day. And so maybe he just thinks he can do that based off of that. And maybe he's getting a little too cocky about it all based off of that as well. But there's clearly a part of Stefanski that believes that that's a strength of his and not necessarily a weakness like it'd be for most other coaches.
So what was most interesting to me was the in-season development piece for the rookies. Was there something that stood out to you with?
Just the idea that he touched on Denzel Ward and talked about how he's progressing nicely from his shoulder injury. I felt like we hadn't had a Denzel Ward update in a little bit. He'd been practicing the last 2 days, but we really had very uncertain as to what his status was going to be and how it was looking even for week one. And week one is going to matter in a big time way. The cornerbacks in general, after the MJ Emerson injury, is always going to be huge. But week one against Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, like, you have to have Denzel Ward in the field. And we've just kind of been absent of updates.
Well, you have to have Denzel, and it still might not be enough.
No, I know. You might end up failing even with Denzel, but at least if you have Denzel, you can, I mean, you focus enough on Jamar Chase and you have a chance. Without Denzel and then without MJ Emerson, obviously, who's gone for, you know, the season, like, you really don't have a chance against those Bengals wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is because Joe is such a great reader of the field, but you can delay with good. I think there's to beat Joe. If you can get four men home consistently, meaning get a pass rush with only four guys or three guys, depending on...
Oh, you had me so confused for a second because you're talking about Burrow, and I'm like, wait, did you switch over to talking about Flacco? Because Joe.
But like every great quarterback in the NFL, if you can get four guys, pressure with four guys, mm-hmm. you have a chance to beat elite quarterbacks in the NFL. But with Joe specifically, because he is such a wizard in how he is able to process the field, and he's just such a brilliant quarterback.
Except for when he's running backwards in that preseason game. Am I right, guys?
Well, but I think this is where the Denzel thing is the equalizer, because now all of a sudden you've got a faster pace because the D-line's coming at you, but every millisecond that Denzel Ward can take T. Higgins or Jamar Chase away, mm-hmm. is just gives you that extra millisecond towards beating Joe Burrow.
And we've seen, like, the reason why Joe Burrow struggles against the Browns, in recent memory, it's been a lot of Myles Garrett. Like, that's why one of the more famous Myles Garrett plays is him doing that little basketball move as he lines up over the center and then just goes after Joe in a game where Joe threw for less than 100 total yards.
Now, they're all important, all right? So when we start to talk about what games are most important, the truth is, while they're all important this year, at some point, the outcomes of the game will become less important as the season goes on if you don't really take care of business early in the season. And that's where Denzel comes in because, the first six games might mean more than the rest of the 11 games, combined, mm-hmm. if you can't get out there and go 2-4 or 3-3.
And especially since with Denzel, you're just already signed up to the idea that he's going to miss a few games a year anyway. Mm-hmm. That's who he is. That's what we've seen with him. And so it's nice. It was good news to hear the update. I liked hearing that from Stefanski, and that's a good sign for Denzel.
216-474-0092. What did you guys hear from Kevin Stefanski? I do like when there's a lot of waiver claim conversations there. And
doesn't do anything for you?
My first thought was, who's writing a column on that?
I bet a lot of people, not us, thankfully.
I mean, listen, I get to take...
If you made me write a Cole Strange article, I think I might just walk out.
I get to take a mini victory lap on Cole Strange because yesterday after he got waived, I said, well, I think he was playing in the wrong system in New England the last couple of years. Actually, last year would have been the right year because Van Pelt was there, but he only played, I think it was three games because of injury. Coming out,
you sound like you want to do an article.
I'm going to do a whole expose right here.
You want to do one?
Coming out, like the zone run offense is like the one that everybody thought that he would actually fit in, and that's not what he played in the first 2 years in New England. He played in the New England style of offensive line, which is just a little different than what the Browns like to do with the zone run.
Number 69 in New England. Nice. Always love that when you get those guys. Malachi Corley, any hot thoughts on him?
The Browns really like...
I think his nickname for himself, I'm assuming it was for himself, called himself the Yak Leader.
He had like...
How cocky do you got to be if your nickname is the Yak Leader?
Didn't he have like 9 catches?
No, he had a lot of production.
When?
Western Kentucky, not in college, not with the Jets. He did nothing with the Jets. You don't get the Yak Leader nickname while in the NFL. You get that clearly before.
Well, don't you go away from that if you're not yakking and you're not doing anything?
I think he was it Yak Leader or Yak King, I think was his nickname.
It was 9 games, 6 targets, 3 receptions.
Yeah, no, he was awful in the NFL. No one's debating that, but that's not why I'm assuming the nickname didn't come once he got to the NFL.
I think you have to retire it if in, going on year 3, you've got 3 catches.
We got a lot of guys with nicknames, don't we?
Some might say too many nicknames.
Wait, with the Sanders, the running back we just ended up getting, he has a nickname.
Thankfully, Snoop Huntley's gone because he's got a dumb nickname.
You can call him Snoop, though. We got there.
Did we?
I knew you would eventually. He had to leave in order for you to go ahead and get there.
I was being ironical. 216-474-0092.
I think it's Yak King, by the way. That's the clarification.
Oh, that's totally
better. He's the Yak King, not Yak. He's Yak King.
Yeah, that's totally more true.
What a gooper.
Yeah. Are the 2025 Browns setting themselves up to be the 2025 Guardians? We'll explain that maybe in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
When we were on the air, what's today? Thursday? When we were on the air Tuesday, all that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce news all broke. And so when that happened, Keith had said to us, hey, maybe try to get Ed Kelce on board. So I tried to get him on board, and he was going to, it seemed like he wanted to join us for a second there on Tuesday when the news broke, but he was going somewhere with his family. He's like, hey, let's just do this in the morning. And I was like, okay, no problem. So that's why when we left the show, Wyatt said, hey, we'll come back and we'll have him with us. And we had a time that was set. And the time was set for 10:30, Dan? Is that we're supposed to have him yesterday? And then the publicist stepped in. And then it was over. So, I mean, I got to give John Kosick credit over at the ABC affiliate here in town because he was able to. He grabbed him right before, and they've got some pretty...
right before the big shutdown?
Yeah, I think he might have been the reason that he got shut down, because John and I were talking...
Pretty good, John.
...the next day. I give, John just said, hey, you got a minute? Because they're friends, too.
Oh, that was a ding.
It was cool. The ding for him or ding for me?
Both.
We're friends. Trust me.
Andy Baskin.
So he said, you know, we were joking around about who was going to pay for the wedding, and I read that to you on the air the other day, and it was like Taylor's mom, or Taylor's dad, sorry. And,
or mom.
Hey, mom and dad, who can, how about Taylor just pay for
Taylor's
the wedding?
Trust fund.
And then by 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, I get the ultimate text. Won't be doing any interviews tomorrow. And I was just like, bummer. And I just said, no problem. We figured you'd get shut down. And he was like, thanks. So anyway, so we really wanted to have him. I mean, we were excited. I was excited to have him on the air to talk about all the stuff that's going on. I mean, the story is just taking on. I mean, I guess we all expected it, but I just, like, I can't go anywhere on social media without seeing it. It's all over the place. I mean, sports, ESPN dumped into programming. Did I get that right? Like, two people told me that ESPN, I think there was tennis on, and they dumped into programming to announce their engagement.
Oh, have you seen tennis these days?
Well, it was love. So,
aww.
There you go. Anyway, so were any of you either one of you guys disappointed? I feel bad. Like, we promised you, I think the morning shows were on the other stations, were kind of excited, and we thought it would happen, but everyone clearly understands why he got shut down. Like, that would be me. That's like my dad, right? My dad would start running his mouth about something like that when he was still living, and I'd have to be like, Dad, man, you can't say stuff like that, and it's not out there yet. Oh, who cares? It's not a big deal. Who cares? It's family. Who cares? It's family. That's what my dad. And I think that's the way Ed approaches. I think that's why I like Ed so much. He kind of reminds me of my dad in some ways. So, anywho, that's why he wasn't on with us yesterday. So I apologize on behalf of the entire staff here at 92.3 The Fan. And I put my head in shame because we thought we had an interview that didn't come through. But that's happened to all of us plenty of times before. Right, Jeff?
We'll get it fixed.
That's right. Nothing to add?
Clinton Howard was fun.
Yeah, I thought you did a nice job of that, by the way.
Clinton was fun, man.
I did have a couple of people text me during the interview. So was he late yesterday?
There was apparently a miscommunication, yeah.
Well, that worked out better. By the way, thank you guys, because I had a little family stuff going on. I was here, and then I had to leave at the last minute. So I appreciate you guys both. I just want you to know that. But, were you excited about that? I thought that was fun.
Oh, I enjoyed talking to him.
So yeah,
he was terrific. He couldn't have been more cordial.
Down to earth. So are you going to go? You guys going to hook up for a beer or something over the weekend? Or?
Sure.
I can see you guys.
I'm hoping to be in Ron's next movie.
Sharing stories.
Sure.
Surprised you didn't ask him about his niece.
About his knees?
His niece.
Dallas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's outstanding. She does a great job. Not only directing.
We were there talking about Clint Howard.
Yeah, but it's a whole family thing. You talked about his dad. I heard you. I was listening.
Yeah.
Talked about his brother.
Yeah, a little bit, but we stuck to Clint for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. All right, Bailey Zappe is back on the practice squad.
Hootie hoot.
You called that, too, by the way, the other day.
Well, I said,
I think he was
Bailey Zappe's
name
out there. What do you think?
What does that mean, though? Does it mean anything that he's back on the practice squad?
I'm not going to read too much into this.
Dan will. He was all.
I'm not going to read too much into it. Here's the thing. This team doesn't have a quarterback. They have numerous guys who play the position, but our team doesn't have a quarterback. And by that, I mean somebody who, and no disrespect to anybody here, but for various reasons, they don't have one that you can think, this guy's going to be here next year, this guy's here the year after that, or whatever. And that's what we've been looking for a long time. So there's safety in numbers, I guess. And you brought in Bailey Zappe. You know, hey, if Bailey could get claimed in a week, you know, from somebody else.
Right.
If something happens to Joe Flacco, well, okay, now you've got backup there. That's kind of what that is to me. Again, I look at this and I think if you're going to have a fourth quarterback, I would have figured out how to keep Kenny Pickett and taking a look. I don't know that Kenny's going to be any great shakes ever again in the NFL, and I don't think he's been great shakes so far in the NFL. I'm still curious, and I would have made sure that I took care of my curiosity there. The Browns must not have been curious about Kenny. Or they saw enough to think, nope, we're not interested.
Or they saw him as value because someone was offering a fifth-round pick.
But that's
the world value they live in, though, on that other...
Value. That's like going downstairs and getting a bag of chips for, you know, a dollar off. Okay, great. Still a bag of chips, and I still paid $1.50.
Wow, you'd pay $2.50 for a bag of chips? That's crazy.
Depends on the chips. If it's Fritos, yes.
Jeff. And immediately, I thought potato chips. It's bad. I have to rethink the way I think things. Not very PC. I directly thought of potato chips. I just want you to know that. So, but Dan, you said something that what does it mean? Because I thought what you said this morning was like, really?
I think it's telling.
What does it tell you, though?
I think it's telling because it tells you that they do not trust Shedeur Sanders to run a scout team. That he is that far behind in an NFL thought process that they don't want him even out there running scout teams. So they need to bring in a fourth guy to run scout team.
You make it sound really harsh. Is there any chance that they want to make sure that he's on the developmental side of the offense and not having to worry about who the other team is the next week?
But part of scout team is that developmental side. I mean, what your job is to simulate what the opponent is doing so then that way your team can get together what's going. If he's in a position where he's not, and yes, this is going to come off harsh, but he's not understanding what the opponent is doing either, that he can emulate that on a practice field, that he could be that practice team and that practice quarterback that could sit back and try to do some of the things that the opponent is doing, then yeah, it tells you that this is truly a developmental process and that he is very far behind.
I don't see it that way. I don't see when you're the scout team quarterback, you're emulating. That just makes you better against your own defense. I don't know if that makes you better against other teams' defenses. Again, you're there to play the role of Joe Burrow. You're there to play the role of any other quarterback in the NFL. And I don't see the massive developmental gains by being someone that you're not who you are. Especially when you're going up against your own defense. Like what you're there to help our defense when you're in that position. That's your job, your role. That doesn't help him understand the Steelers defense any better. That doesn't help him understand the Bengals defense any better. It doesn't bother me that Shedeur Sanders wouldn't be the scout team quarterback. It's just less reps. That's how I see it. And it's just like, okay. And I do think you're right, though. That's the problem with this. Like, I think you're harsh, but I think you're right. I think that the Browns are looking at this going, we need to bring in another quarterback that maybe, because let's not kid ourselves. If Huntley was coming in and would have started that one preseason game, the one that Sanders did, that like they wanted him to start. That seemed very evident. He just wasn't up to speed yet, so they gave Sanders a start. And then Sanders looked good, threw two touchdowns. That's what we talk about, taking advantage of an opportunity. That's what I like about Shedeur. He took advantage of the opportunity they gave him that he may not have had if Pickett wasn't hurt. So you don't see it that way, though, Jeff, right? You don't see if he's not the practice squad quarterback, he's not the scout team quarterback.
I don't know how Kevin will do it. If I had to pick one guy to run the scout team, it would definitely be Bailey Zappe. He's been around the league for a while. You know, he can give that to my defense. There's nothing wrong with this. I'm sorry. Shedeur is a developmental guy, and I don't mind at all. You take all the time you need to develop him and see if he can be something for you. It's okay. You know, I'm not going to point fingers. This is bad. This is good. This is whatever. They brought in a fourth quarterback. Why? Because they don't have one. They're trying to get lucky. And I don't think they're going to be able to get lucky enough this year to avoid taking a quarterback next year. I hate to say that the whole thing's been put on hold, but I don't think there's any question about that. It would have been unlikely before training camp even started. You know, the only thing that's changed is that Pickett isn't here and Bailey Zappe is. And Zappe's on a practice squad.
I lay this out as not being a slam on Shedeur Sanders. That's not what I'm aiming to do.
No, that's not what I'm saying either.
When you say the franchise doesn't trust him, that the organization doesn't trust him.
Right, I'm just saying, hey, for everybody who's out there who's
How does that not come off as a slam?
Who's a Shedeur Sanders fan, he's farther away than I think a lot of you want to believe. That's kind of how I see this.
Which is quite possible.
Right. That maybe everybody
needs okay.
To.
But that's okay. That's okay.
100% yes.
And so maybe they just brought in Bailey Zappe to do that. I mean, Zappe's been around the league. And I would, if I'm Kevin Stefanski and I need to get the defense ready to take on Joe Burrow, I'm going to have Bailey Zappe running the Bengals offense. And so they probably will.
An odd question for you, both of you.
Sure.
Have either of you worked in a kitchen at any point?
Yeah.
Only my
yes,
own.
Yes.
Okay. There's a great phrase at a kitchen, Andy, that a chef will tell you that no part of food ever goes to waste, right?
It's only when you're washing dishes, though. That's the hard part about it. But yeah, I keep going.
Correct.
Yeah.
So like if you ever have worked at a kitchen, you know that like you take the onion skins and you will use that with chicken bones and all that kind of stuff to turn right. that into stock.
Right.
Like nothing goes to waste in a kitchen.
Okay.
An NFL roster works the same way. Nothing goes to waste on an NFL roster. So that's the part of the Shador thing that I have questions on, because if you're not going to run scout team, is this just going to be off to the side? Are you just going to be getting reps off to the side and they're going to have you, you know, maybe learn things a little bit more, develop a little bit farther? I don't want to say, is this wasting a roster spot? Because that's not how I mean it. And that's not how I'm saying it. It just feels very unorthodox from how you typically hear an NFL team is run. That typically, if you have three quarterbacks, one of them is the scout team quarterback.
216-474-0092, let it ride. I don't think that this was a sabotaging of Shador Sanders. I don't think they tried to do Shador Sanders dirty. There's a couple people who do. I believe Emory Hunt is one of those people. He'll join us this morning at 9:20 from CBS Sports. We'll talk to him about that. Daryl Ryder going to join us at 8:20 this morning. We'll also do about last night coming up at 7:45. My depth chart hasn't changed, even though it's not fair. I don't think it's fair to Shador. My depth chart hasn't changed. I go by who I want to see, flat out. I want to see Joe to start the season. See, this is where, you know, I think you got to call me out for hypocrisy here. I'm advocating for you to do this with me, because if I'm working in real life, Shador's number three. He's number three in the depth chart. If I'm working in my own, I think it's just not a fair thing to do. So I kind of have to run my depth chart by you, Tone, because it's like Joe, okay, why do I say Joe? Do I want to see the 40-year-old quarterback go out there and play even though we have no future with him after this year? Yeah, that's a great thing to ask myself. And I say, well, you have to be responsible to the veterans. The veterans are there. You have to do it. And then I put Shador there, and my answer completely contradicts what I just said about Joe. But I also think by the time Joe's done, it's kind of up in the air where it's like, all right, because I like Shador. I don't know what his future is going to be. I just think he's got a higher ceiling than Gabriel or Pickett. So I might as well see what he has before I go to Gabriel or Pickett. Kenny Pickett, I don't think is going to be long for here. Maybe I'll end up being wrong. I think Dylan Gabriel will draw a pension someday in the league because he's a fine backup. But I didn't think Dylan Gabriel was overwhelmingly wonderful on Saturday. I thought it was a fine game. Shador was bad. Shador was trying to throw a touchdown on every single pass. I think he was trying to light up the sky, put highlights out there, and it just wasn't the right thing to do with third teamers around you and you being a third teamer. It was understand the offense. If you got to check down, get out of there, punt it away, and we'll see where it goes. I understand that he wants to go further, but that was not the situation, and you could clearly tell it was not the situation to do it. But that's where my depth chart is, even though I know it's hypocritical.
Well, let me ask you this.
It's totally hypocritical.
No, I get where you're coming from. I guess I would ask you this. If it weren't a Brown situation, because me and you were excited about Shador, you know, last year. I mean, we were watching his games in college and talking about him like crazy. Go listen to our old podcast. So the part of the hype machine, like maybe we were responsible for it because we were talking about him all the time. If it weren't a Brown situation, what would you say for him if you truly cared about him? Because I could certainly make the argument, and I guess I will, that if he's been nowhere near ready, and again, anybody who's been around the Browns that have talked to them, they've said, oh, he's nowhere near ready. He's got to make up this gap. If you believe that and you care about his career, then a guy that's nowhere ready, who's not really going to get any substantial reps or any realistic opportunity here for a while.
Yeah.
Aren't you a little nervous about his future? Because if he goes in like in week four, for whatever reason, if you could line it up that were to happen, isn't it kind of obvious that his career could be in jeopardy because it's a fifth round pick? And if he goes out there thrown to the Lions now, then that could be it for his career, for his chances as a quarterback in this league.
Well, it's where does he have the capacity to protect himself, protect the offense right now?
I don't think so.
Okay, if he doesn't, then he has to start later because he has to get his bearings. there's a lot of learning he has to do then.
Doesn't he need another offseason, another training
camp?
It's
not about what I want. I almost want to write it up on the whiteboard, but I'm speaking in front of a microphone here. So it's like, it's not what I want. It's what he needs. So what does he need? So then I have to bump him down the depth chart. So then, yeah, I would put Kenny Pickett out there before.
Well,
so I guess I have to put him number three, even though I don't want to change my depth chart. But I know it's not fair because what I saw Saturday, it wasn't fair. I don't know if it's fair to anybody, to be honest with you. And he would be playing with the ones, but yeah, you're playing with the ones, but you're also not playing against base defense. You're not playing against a team that's trying to get out of there. You're playing against really good football players who are the best of the best. You're playing against their ones. They're going to be throwing some intricate things at you. They're going to be trying to throw you off your game as best you can. Like, that's going to be a difficult spot. So now I have to find myself into going, do we trust each other enough here? Do we trust one another to run this offense? Do I trust you to conduct the offense out there in the field? And frankly, does he trust me enough, if I'm Kevin Stefanski, to call plays that are going to put us in the best position possible? Because we cannot play video game football in real season games where we're just trying to throw touchdowns on every single pass. You have to conduct an offense and move down the field and keep things balanced. You have to. So I'm in a real tug and pull here. Like, I don't think this guy should go anywhere. They're not going to cut him. I don't think he should be cut. I think he should be right here. And I think eventually he should get, if the season goes the way we think it's going to go, he should get a crack at playing for us.
All right, well, I do want to ask you, though. So this is the unintended stuff that me and you, we all knew, a lot of the fans knew were coming when they took Shador. And obviously we see where he's been on the depth chart. So it wasn't exactly going to be an easy battle for him. It was always going to be uphill. According to guys like Zach Jackson, like his throws, his highs were better than anybody else. Like, they were a thing of beauty. It's just wasn't ready for all the other stuff. Quarterbacking is not just making some throws, running around and making throws. That's not quarterback in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
That's nowhere near close to quarterback in the NFL. If it were the case, there'd be so many other guys that would have had a chance to have careers. You know, just ask Johnny Manziel. He had some arm talent, did he not? That guy was not ready to be a quarterback. The quarterback is a lot of other things. And by all accounts, Shador has worked his butt off to try to get there. It's just not there as of now. What about all the other stuff that comes with it? Like, we're bringing on a guy today, let's be fair. Emory Hunt, right? We're bringing him on later in the show in the 9 o'clock hour. He had vicious things to say about Kevin Stefanski.
We have a clip of it.
Go ahead.
A lot of times with coaches like Kevin Stefanski, it's ego over execution. It's plays over players. At the end of the day, you got to give this kid a shot to redeem himself. That's the beauty of being a rookie. You're going to go out there. You're going to struggle. You're going to have some success. You're going to struggle again, but you want to see them come out on the other side. Now, Shador had 5 sacks, 5 drives, just was trying to press, trying to impress coaches, the fans, trying to live up to what Dillon Gabriel just put out there on the field. And Kevin Stefanski handled that situation and this whole quarterback competition horribly, because you removed an opportunity for him to redeem himself in that situation to go out as a winner. And again, it's not just we all see it. Players on a team sees it. Players on the opposing team see it. They know what's going on. They know what's going down. But it's all about Kevin Stefanski's ego. We saw this with Baker Mayfield. Oh, it doesn't fit my system. Well, your system has to be about the players that are in it. And we've seen him do this because the offense was completely different when Dillon Gabriel was out there. It was a lot of, you know, short, quick passes to get the ball out of his hands, spread the formation, which is great. That's what you're supposed to do for a guy that thrives in that situation. So I don't know why for Shador the offense changed. He kind of wanted to curate something around him. But at the end of the day, Shador recognized he had to play better. That game looked a lot like that UCLA game his first year in Colorado. But I blame Stefanski for how he's handled this whole situation, because it doesn't look very coach of the year leadership-like to me.
Well, the whole situation, I mean, in the game, to not have him come back out in the fourth quarter, I agree with him on that one.
CBS, by the way.
The audio courtesy of CBS HQ. Thank you very much. I agree with him on that one. I think that the play calling, again, there were shorter routes that he could have thrown. I don't think he was looking at the shorter routes when I was watching that game. And that's why I said I think he's trying to go big time on every throw.
Yeah.
And I think because things weren't going his way, I do. I think that there was some anger there, some frustration. I think any of us would have been angry and frustrated. And he knows he's going to be on the team this week and the guys in front of him aren't. And so you're going to be frustrated in that moment going, damn it, I can't look down the field. I can't get rid of this freaking football because I don't want to throw an interception because then people are going to be going crazy at me. And I do. I think that there is too much paying attention to everything else going on when it comes to Shador. When it comes to Kevin and the Browns, they're trying to keep it all out of it. But it's going to be real hard to do as the season goes on.
You got harsh criticisms coming from all sorts of directions. You've got people accusing Stefanski and really this organization. Of all organizations, by the way, the stuff that was going on from some of the provocateurs, and I'll say it, the grifters, they were out in full force over the last few days just accusing the Browns of not just sabotage. Well, let's be honest. I mean, they were making this racial. Like, yeah, the front office of Andrew Berry and the team that gave all the guaranteed money to Deshaun Watson is all of a sudden a racist organization. Like, they just, this is what comes with this conversation. And yes, I realize social media is not often real life, but there are some real ex-players in this league and some real commentators. I mean, you see the stuff, the Fox commentator, Mike Hill, was that it?
Mike Hill, yeah.
Did you see the stuff that he put out there about accusing this organization? I couldn't believe it. I could not believe
it. Yeah, I was pretty surprised by it. I mean, you guys have to understand. And we say it all the time, and then people get... I don't want to treat a fifth rounder like a fifth rounder like a fifth rounder. I think his ceiling is much higher than that. I'm pretty surprised that he dropped himself, myself. And I don't care even after saying, well, you know why he dropped. No, I don't think it was as strong as what it was. But obviously, I think that... You know, what Jason had put out there is like, yeah, man, if you get him, you're getting a following that's very, very strong. And if you don't think that he can start the season as your starter, are you going to be strong enough to deal with the following that he has, which is going to be strong, which is going to be going actively against your starting quarterback and then even your backup quarterback before the time that he's able to get in? And that's what I think what a lot of teams went through. But the whole, he needs to be on a team that really appreciates him. This is the team that appreciates him.
This is the only one.
It's the only one, guys. I'm not saying this to be mean-spirited at all. If you listen to the show, you know I like Shador. There's a guy on the station who likes Shador way more than I do even. And Tone likes Shador as well. So if you listen to the show, you know it's been a pro-Shador show. But I'm not being mean when I say this. The Saints got their guy, and they're getting him ready. The Jets got their guy, and they're getting him ready. The place that would truly, as what did Mike Hill say, that would appreciate Shador?
I got it here.
It's not in the NFL. It's not in the NFL then.
It's incredible.
This is where it starts. And he could go out there and perform well and put the Browns. His next chance will be in December. So he can go out there and perform well and make one of these other teams want to kick the tires on him, as the Browns will definitely draft a quarterback in the first round, probably high in the first round next year. And he could put himself in a position to do it. Or you could be kicking and screaming about how he's not going to be able to find a place in the league because they're not going to want that. Because as of right now, he is not ready to start the season. And everybody and their brother is saying, everybody and their whole family is saying about how this guy is being screwed over. There's improprieties going on. There are bad things going on. There are bad actors in this, and they shouldn't be doing what they're doing to Shador. You think that any of these other teams are going to sign up for this who don't have... Like, Mahomes and the Chiefs could stand it. The Bills and Allen could stand it. There's about a handful of teams that could really do it. But there's a lot of teams going, nope, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because of all the reaction. I think the Browns legitimately want to give him a chance. I don't agree with how they go about their business most of the time when it comes to giving guys a chance. I'll say that. I don't think that they're doing it on purpose. Put the boots to a quarterback on purpose?
To send
this
a message.
This team that's this desperate.
It's obvious. Send a message.
Send what message? To the fans who love him? send a message to what? To the people who bought his jersey? To the money that they can make off his name? The money they can make with him as their quarterback? The billboards that they could fill up if he were good? They're sending a message to who? Who are they sending a message to? A team that's this desperate for a quarterback. That everything in their world, everything since the moment Jimmy Haslam has owned this team has been about finding a quarterback. And I know they had one. I get it. I got it. At that time, not a lot of people thought. A team that's this desperate, that keeps them up at night in the middle of the winter after the season about finding a quarterback. Now they want to send a message to a guy? What message? Let's get our heads out of the clouds. It's the one organization you can't claim isn't desperate. They are. They'll do anything they can to find that guy, especially after they jettisoned the guy they had before.
We just had Jimmy Watkins with us from Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer. And Jimmy talking a little baseball with us, a little football as well. And I had something strike me, Dan. I've been thinking about this for a few days. And then Jimmy just kind of hammered it home for me. And last year we had a football team that really struggled to score points. Last in the National Football League in scoring points, under 16 a game.
Repugnant is the word I would use to describe watching them.
It's a good word.
It is.
We have a baseball team that is struggling offensively like absolute crazy.
Atrocious is the word I would use to describe that offense.
And I just started to think about a couple of things, and I thought, oh, please tell me no. Are the Guardians the blueprint for what we're going to see out of the Browns this year offensively?
Oh, no.
All the way around, maybe.
Oh, no.
Well, let me throw this at you. There are a couple of things that are too striking in similarity to me to think that I'm not completely missing the mark here. Okay? What's going to be the basis of this Browns team if it goes well? And, folks, I'd love your thoughts on this. 216-474-0092. If it goes okay, if they're going to compete, if they're going to do what the Guardians are actually doing this year, which is competing, they're hanging. They're not out of the playoff race yet. How are they doing it? Pitching, correct?
Correct.
If the Browns are going to do that, compete, hang, have a chance, how are they going to do that in theory? Defense, correct?
Correct.
The defense is what could help this team remain in contention all year if they're able to do it. But look at what the Guardians did on the offensive side of the ball. You know, they one of their best hitters left, and that's and not by his choice, but it was Josh Naylor, and they brought in a guy who's had a fine career and has been in Cleveland before, and they brought him back again to be one of the main guys in Carlos Santana.
Mm-hmm.
What did this team do at quarterback? They brought in a guy who's had a fine career, has been in Cleveland before, and they brought him back as he's pushing the age of 40 in Joe Flacco.
Mm.
He's the football Carlos Santana. Carlos has been okay at best this year. He's not been typical Carlos Santana.
No.
I'm hoping Joe Flacco can be more typical Joe Flacco than Carlos Santana was Carlos Santana.
Agreed. We are all hoping for that exact same thing to be the case, that Joe Flacco has one last season in him of, you know, maybe two seasons in him, but definitely at least one season in him of throwing way more touchdowns than he does interceptions and making this offense really fun to watch and a little more high-flying than we all think it might be.
I've been looking at the outfielders for like crazy for this Guardians team for a number of years. And what did they do to really improve that in the offseason? Nothing.
Brought your boy Nolan Jones back?
Nothing.
Okay.
What did the Browns do at wide receiver this year? A position that we've been looking at forever and thinking, boy, they really need some additions there. What did they do? What did they bring in to help, major help at that position? Well, they tried Deontay Johnson and that didn't work because they cut him.
Isaiah Bond.
They brought in Isaiah Bond and Angel Martinez. Okay. I'm thinking, okay, the Guardians tried to get by without making a major move to improve that outfield, and the Browns are trying to do the same with the wide receiving core. Now, they might be able to pull it off. I like Isaiah Bond. I like Angel Martinez. But is he the answer? Is Bond the answer? I don't know. You see the correlation I'm trying to draw here?
Can I give you a name that just got released that I'd be interested in?
Just got released or signed?
Just got released.
Okay.
Patriots are moving on from Kendrick Bourne.
I believe he's injured, isn't he?
I think he is too, but I would be interested in Kendrick Bourne.
I would too.
That is the first name of the clunkers that are out there on the, I shouldn't say it that way. That is the first name of the group of players who are out there after cuts that I would be interested in.
Their mom and dad wouldn't like you calling them clunkers.
I dumped that part because I didn't like how it came off.
Oh, okay. Nice. Way to hit the button.
That's what I'm here for. That's what I do. I hit buttons.
The Browns are going to succeed by being a good running team, are they not? They
seems to be the path.
They tried to really improve that by bringing in Quinshon Judkins, but he's not here yet. The Guardians tried to improve their infield by bringing in Travis Bazana. For a different reason, he's not here yet. So they're going to roll with Dylan Sampson and guys who have been here before, Jerome Ford, and hope Jerome does even more than he did before, Gabe Arias. I'm having way too much fun with this comparison. Bob's in Akron. Bob.
Jeff, unfortunately, I find validity in your comparison, and it's not, it doesn't make me optimistic. But I would say there's one distinction between in the comparison.
Give it to me, Bob.
And that is, well, with the Guardians, we know pretty much for certain the problem is they don't spend money. If they had the money to spend the Yankees or Dodgers had, we would not have a problem scoring runs. In the Browns' case, I'm afraid that the issue is incompetence. They're willing to spend money, they just don't spend it in the right place.
Bob, I can't argue with that, any bit of it.
The problem is the Deshaun Watson contract remains a giant boulder around the neck of this team. And until you can get that boulder off of your neck, you're going to have this problem. That's just going to be the truth of the Cleveland Browns. Until you get the Deshaun Watson contract off. Now, if you want your comparison that you're doing here between the guards and the Browns, I'll give you the positive of it.
Oh, good.
If this is truly the case,
all right,
the Browns are a 500 ball club.
Well, see, that's my point.
Which is way higher than
that's my point
where
here.
A lot of us have them.
I think the Browns can pull that off if they're able to do a couple of things that we think they're going to be able to do, which is run the football. And running the football is kind of, you know, that's the safety net for this team. The safety net for the Guardians when it comes to the offense has been, all right, let's have some scrappy guys who can put the ball in play and try and manufacture some runs. And they've done it, even though their numbers are just atrocious, they've done it well enough to compete, oddly enough, because the defense has carried them. The defense is the pitching staff. Mm-hmm. And it's not been as great as it once was, but it was better, I think, maybe than last year. Except for the bullpen.
It's still pretty darn good.
It is, yeah. And see, the Browns' defense last year wasn't quite as good as the year before, but it was still okay. And if they can improve that this year, that gives them the groundwork to go ahead and run the football, because the defense is going to help you out in that regard by keeping the other team down. And you're not going to have to light up the scoreboard. I honestly, to me, it's a little too close for comfort.
Right. But the difference being in this and the run the ball thing, and this is what always is what is scaring me of the Browns season ahead, is that you are dealing with an offensive line that are all going to be over the age of 30 besides for DeJuan Jones. And that's the part of the we're going to run the snot out of the ball, play serious ball control offense, attempt to win every game that we can 21-17, and really, you know, fall back on the defense and grind it out on the offensive side to give the defense a little bit of a break. It just is such a thin margin of error, especially when you have an offensive line that's a little on the older side. And that's the thing, is older guys, you know, veterans, they're knowledgeable.
They're talented. They know how to play the game.
But they get hurt.
Yep. Mike is in Cleveland. Hello, Mike.
What's up, Mike?
What's up, boys?
You.
Not much, dude.
Hey, I think we all know the difference between the MLB and the NFL is that the MLB, that players union will never settle for a ceiling for contracts. And but why in the world if don't they have revenue sharing? And then are these owners pocketing the money and they're not spending? I mean, we've seen it for a long time now. Why are some of these teams so bad? You know? And then the NFL does what they do because they have a salary cap. So, I mean, with that, I mean, obviously we all know this. You know, I'm not saying anything different. And I'm not asking you which came first, the chicken or the egg, because we all know it was the rooster. And with that, I'll let you go.
All right, Mike.
But so here's always my rebuttal to these to these questions. Okay, so you're going to compare Major League Baseball that does not have a cap to the NFL, which does. So then why have the Bears been a mess outside of one Super Bowl run in the 2000s? The Bears have been a mess since 85.
Well, this is management.
Why have the Browns since 99? Ran into the issues that they have ran into in between there.
Management.
Arizona Cardinals have had one Super Bowl run, and then outside of that, they have been in the doldrums.
Like management and ownership.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So no matter if you put a ceiling, if you put a cap, if you put any of those things together there, it's how you run your business that's the thing. That will always be the thing when it comes to all of these franchises. It's putting people who are smart in charge, giving them the power to do what they do best, and backing off and letting them do what they do best. That's what it is. And investing in the places like player development and investing in those kind of things to help your players get to the positions they need to succeed. It's that simple in both of these sports. Who right now, the best record in baseball is the Milwaukee Brewers. It's not the Dodgers. It's not the Padres. It's not the Yankees. It's not the Red Sox. It's the little old Milwaukee Brewers.
The only problem is, can the Milwaukee Brewers do that year after year after year? Like guys like New York and L.A., the Dodgers, like they can do. Anybody else see the parallels here? And the parallels, as Dan commented, might mean the Browns could pull this thing off. In other words, compete, hang, and be there for most of the season, just as the Guardians are doing right now.
That to me is like the safest, least sexy, least like just anything kind of prediction for the Cleveland Browns, because it's just over the over 5.5.
Yeah.
And 6 wins is kind of like the no man's land of is it good? Is it bad? What does it mean for Kevin Stefanski? Like, I don't know you get any clarity on 6 wins.
Well, I think it's safe. I mean, listen, I said 6 wins. I think part of the reason why I said 6 wins is because I really don't know if they're going to be able to go and be a 3-win team. I don't believe they're going to be like an 8 or 9 win team. But it is the NFL, and I guess anything does happen, even though we are in this weird stretch of the NFL where it feels like parity is kind of taking a back seat. At least it did last year in many respects.
Chalk.
Yeah, very chalk. Last year was chalk.
And I really struggle with that this year in this division, because chalk in general means you think it's going to go Baltimore, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. I think the only thing that I think is going to chalk is that last one.
Yeah, I mean, well, think about it. Last year, favorites won 72% of their games, which was the second highest rate since the NFL went to 16 games.
Vegas doing well.
I mean, it was just an odd season. 6 of the division winners in 2023 repeated as champions in 2024. Like, it was the year of chalk in a way that we hadn't seen. So if you're expecting the NFL to kind of flip the Browns and really kind of have, just because of parity, have them in the catbird seat because of just how it works from a 3-win team moving over, you'd suggest that right now we're just in the wrong era for that.
And I just think, like, this season specifically is the season to not split the difference. Like, 6 wins is splitting the difference. You're not going to get the number 2 pick again. You're also not going to be in the playoffs. 6 wins, I mean, you might be in the playoff conversation early. 11 losses stack up real quick, even if it's just you're 6-6. Weren't you 6-6 when Joe took over, or 6-5 or 5-6, something like that, in 2023?
We ended up winning 11 games, but Flacco went 4-1 down the stretch.
And then you lost the last one because nobody played. Jeff Driscoll played. So technically 4-2 in your final. I'm not doing math. I'm just not going to embarrass my family like that. It's going to be Lee Corso and how you get him off the air all over again. I mean, I just, I like, to me, it be a 3-win team or be a 9-win team. And I think that if the opposite of a sweet spot is 6 wins, because I don't know how much you can tell about a team with 6 wins. Like, if you're Kevin Stefanski, can you claim a victory if you get to 6 wins with this ball club?
No. No, and that's saying, the hard part I have with even myself saying 6 wins is that I don't know where the wins come from. But if you're Stefanski, you're not puffing out your chest like, oh, I beat Vegas's expectations.
I mean, I think they can spin it. When I say they
have a hard time because it's 9 wins over 2 seasons, and I just think that's a really hard thing to be able to try to sell to anybody.
But you know how they're going to spin it. Hey, we went from 3 wins to 6 wins, and now we finally are on path to answering the quarterback.
Who are they? The Cavs? With that linear growth line that they had have had for years now. It's like, we won more games than we did last year.
You don't think they'll try and spin that?
No, I think they will. I'm not going to buy it is the point. I'll be here to tell you guys I won't buy it.
I don't know. I just continue to come back to 6. Every time, because, you know, my general theory has been when people say 7 wins in this town, media members, you just don't want to say 5 wins. I actually think 6 wins... Like, Ken made a very impassioned plea this morning on why he thinks they're going to hit the over. And I was like gearing up for like, I'm going to play this sound and here's why I'm going to argue with Ken. Mm-hmm. And then he said 6 wins. And I was like, it took the wind out of my sails. Cause I'm like, yeah.
Like, a big lead up to then say 6 wins.
Well, no, but by the way, like...
Which is fine. He's trying to sell why he thinks that the over is going to hit, but I get it.
Here's the thing. His plan for what they're going to do, that is how they're going to try and win, but to then say they're going to do all that, elite defense,
were you expecting a Coach Riz 8 or 9 wins, a Danny Cannell 8 or 9 wins? We've conveniently had the two people that have given you the 8 or 9 wins prediction. We've had them on in the previous 24 hours.
And Coach Riz, by the way, tried to double down on the burger bet. And I'm
trying to double down.
Yeah. So if you guys missed it,
if you learn anything about burger bets with Nick, don't do them. Nick doesn't lose these.
Yeah, I'm Vegas when it comes to burger bets. He hit me up and he said, "Are you willing to add a chocolate malt with extra malt?"
I love this.
To the over under deal that we have for the Browns.
He left the burger bet, thought about it to himself, and said, "You know what? Mm-hmm. Nick's going to look like an idiot here. Let's do this." Yep.
And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." So we have Hazard on this bet again, and now I'm going to be. I mean, it's burgers, teasers, and a shake again, and it's going to be glorious. I might have this thing wrapped up by like late October, early November.
Yeah, but it won't be glorious though, because you'll be eating your burger as the Browns stink week in, week out, and that's not going to be fun.
I'm going to have a celebratory burger for getting a top 5 pick. Is that what I just heard there?
No, because you said you're going to be celebrating it in week 10, week 11, week 12. You're going to still have to go through the whole entire process while hoping beyond hope that if the Browns stink that much to begin with, that they actually see the plan through.
We'll see.
Because there's a chance the Browns don't see the plan through in many ways. And then all of a sudden they try to really win games with Dylan Gabriel. And whether he can or can't, it's a different story. But it's really hard to win just 3 games.
216-474-0092. How much of a victory would 6 wins be this year? But like to what Ken was saying and what Coach Riz was saying yesterday. Again, one guy said 6 wins and Ken and Coach Riz said 8 or 9 wins. And this is where I think the Browns can trap you, is that everything they do appears logical. They're so good at explaining it and logicking it to you. So like when you say, hey, we're going to be stout in the trenches. We're going to rely on our defense. We're going to rely on we're going to rely on the run game and a heavy dose of it. That's going to be our identity. And then we're going to do play action off of it. And we're going to mitigate the mistakes by mitigating the amount of times. Every bit of that sounds like you could win. The problem is, every bit of that sounds like you could also win 6 games or 5 games or 4 games. And I think what's interesting, and this is because we continue to come back to how good are the Browns, right? Look at the names. The roster doesn't look that bad. They're not trying to tank. These are some of the things said about it. I look back on it and I'm like, I think we're missing the point. Like, there are teams that are going to try and do what you do, mm-hmm. and their margin for error, because whether it's more talented quarterback, better, more proven weapons around the quarterback, better O-line, more balanced O-line, healthier O-line, whatever it is, like, their margin for error is going to be better. Your margin, you could as flawlessly as possible execute this vision, but the wrong injuries or Joe turns the ball over too many, you could hit 5 wins while the plan succeeds.
Right? Like,
well, that would be multiple plans at play here, though. And that's the worry I have, is that the Browns are trying to have multiple plans, and then whichever one shows itself in the first 6 or 7 weeks will be the one they go to. Like the plan A being, let's try to win as many games as we possibly can, and then if Joe Flacco goes off to the races and looks great and the defense looks great, then they veer themselves towards that. And then also, you could have a scenario where 6, 7 games in, Joe Flacco is stinking up the joint, the defense has a bunch of injuries they can't overcome, and then they try to sell you on the idea that it was always about trying to get a top 3, top 5 pick for the quarterback draft class of 2026. Like, the problem I have with a 6-win scenario, if they try to sell you that this is a win, is that it is not a win in the "we were going for it, trying to win" category, and it is not a win from the "we were trying to stink in order to get to 3 wins, 4 wins to get the quarterback of the future."
Now, here's the spin on it, though. It might be the exact sweet spot in which you can have the season you need to have, meaning be in the top 10 pick conversation, so you won't have to give as much to trade up, right, to go get your quarterback, unless Jacksonville really stinks it up. But there's enough there that you can say, well, the rookies played really well. We really just need a quarterback. We doubled our wins. Bring Kevin Stefanski back, which then creates its own like section of, all right, how many losing seasons, how many bad years can you have while going through a, it becomes the Jason Garrett of it.
Yeah, and
but I think the Browns might think that's the sweet spot.
If they think that's the sweet spot, I think it's the worst spot.
I mean, I think
pick a lane. My goodness.
No, I get it. And from the, there's, yes. And my problem is there's so much ambiguity in 6 wins. It could all be left to a whim of Jimmy Haslam, how the weather hits him on any given day,
which
right?
Which is oftentimes how this ends up going for the Browns.
I mean, it has, but it hasn't recently.
I know, but I think Jimmy having a say is back in the picture. I've seen it over the past few months. I think Jimmy going back to maybe old Jimmy is definitely in the cards.
I still think it's more of the Haslam consortium than it is just
that
Jimmy.
That might be a part of it too, but ultimately I think the owner or whatever people around the ownership, I think they have more say and more power within this. And whatever distractions they had over the past couple years, I got a feeling they're not going to be as distracted this year.
But I think when you have the extremes, you win 3 games, all right, well, you gave Kevin Stefanski 6 years. You're going to have a clean slate. You might even have a clean slate at GM. There, you can sell of like, hey, our ownership group gave these guys an opportunity.
Yeah.
It just didn't work out. With 8 or 9 wins, it's apparent, hey, that was so much better than we thought. Even if we got to trade up and do something drastic to get that, winning 8 or 9 games tells you this roster is in a much better spot than maybe I think it is. But 6 wins, it really is like there's the, all right, you fired Kevin Stefanski. How's the league going to react to that? How are other candidates going to react to that, right? You don't fire Stefanski. All right, well, what does that mean for the quarterback you're about to try and draft? Like, that's, it continues, it's like the stickiest of spots, and it's not only the least sexy. I think it's the spot where 6 wins is probably the spot that allows you the most opportunity to really screw this up long term one way or another.
I think the most changes probably happen at 6 wins. Like, you could have all sorts of different things, whether that comes from quarterback, head coach, GM, the whole lot. And because, like, if you
could
end
also
up,
be the, I want to say, least amount of changes, but it could also lead to not enough change for some people.
Well, if you get with 6 wins, no way do you keep your quarterback if you have 6 wins. There's not a scenario that I can find that exists where you'd keep Joe Flacco for another season, or Dylan Gabriel could have done enough to even showcase that he needs to be the guy long term. So quarterback would definitely change at 6 wins.
216-474-0092. How much of a victory would 6 wins be? Because you do hit the over. You do double the win total from last year. But it might take it to a little bit more longer to get the quarterback. It's still 6 wins and 11 losses. Let's go with Mike in Stowe. How much of a victory would a 6-win season be for the Browns this year, given that Vegas has them at 5.5 wins?
That would be a disaster, Nick, because I don't want them in. That is like, that is no man's land. You know, that is down in the, you know, 8, 9, 10 in the draft class, and we don't want that. It doesn't really do anything for us. I've been on here a couple times and said it, you know, I hate to say it, but you know that, and I do, you know, I'm definitely not going higher than that. I'll take the under for sure. I just think 6 would be a disaster. You know, we don't want to draft around there because it shows we're not quite to what we need. Like Johnson said, you know, it probably tells us that we don't have our quarterback at that point, which I don't know we have a long-term. We might have a great backup, but and that's okay. If that's all we get out of this draft, because when we drafted and where we had the options, we did the best we could.
which is kind of what I want to ask you guys. Like, I really think that those two can keep their jobs, and I'll tell you why. When I think about it today, and I know things can change in a matter of, you know, 5-6 months when the season goes about itself, but even then, who becomes available at the end of the season for a coaching job? The next hot coordinator, you know, somebody else's team, a coach that got fired somewhere, or the sexy college choice? Do we really want one of those as opposed to Kevin, even if he doesn't get us over the hump? I mean, does that really sound like a great upgrade? I don't think Jimmy takes the bait. That's why I think he keeps his job, unless it's just an off the rails, lose the locker room and just crazy baloney, you know, like, you know, and I don't see that happening. Because if there is one thing, Kevin's the adult in the room. I wish he had more passion sometimes, but he's always the adult in the room. So that's
Mike,
what I'm thinking, guys.
Yeah. We appreciate you, buddy. Thank you very much. So here's the trick question in all of this. I think 6 wins, maybe. You might be safe. 5 wins or less, if you go from 3 wins to 5 wins this year, like, I do think the catch 22 is, can you keep the locker room? I don't know too many coaches that have Kevin's profile that can keep the locker room with 8 wins in 2 years.
It just seems it's impossible.
I'm going to give you a name because I want credit on this when we talk about it. If this goes down the wrong way,
okay,
John Gruden.
You mean to replace Stefanski is what you're saying. You're calling your shot on Gruden first?
Offensive head coach. Maybe this allows you to keep Andrew Berry, who can then just draft. I know what you're saying, but it allows you some continuity, and you have your new quarterback guru, and I think there's the Tennessee angle of this where John's very fond of Tennessee. There's Haslam's, obviously, Tennessee alums. John Gruden in about 4 months would make drive Andrew Berry and Paul DePodesta crazy, but that also might not be too not fun.
I think the man spends too much time on TikTok these days and the golf course, but it'll be interesting. I'll give you the, if it happens, I'll give you, I heard it with Gruden and you first.
How much of a victory would a 6-win season be for the Browns and the Switzerland territory for Berry and Stefanski in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan?